Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda. Thanks for being a listener.
We're still live from Los Angeles, California, in our friend Allison's home. Have you visited the gym, Chemda?
I visited Runyon Canyon, which I think is the gym of LA.
You've been there every day, right?
Every other day, as much as I can.
How much running is that?
It's called Runyon Canyon, right. But I walk in Canyon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's steep enough that that's plenty. I mean, even just walking to the store here is like walking half of Runyon Canyon, which is great.
I have this letter here. I want to read it to you. It's for you, Chemda.
Oh, hi.
This is from Chris Blatchley. And he says, I've been trying to write this email for about a year.
Oh, these are my favorite. Because I have those emails in my head. Like, I should send this. Okay. Oh, this is either horrible about me or wonderful about me.
If I see any spelling mistakes, and this took a year.
Are you grading his paper?
Maybe it's one you can forward to your mom.
I'll forward it to my mother-in-law.
I'm trying to keep it short, but I wanted to thank you. I've been a listener since like episode 7 or 8.
I wonder if he went back or not. Chris, I hope you didn't go back and you just missed 7 or 8 and you just understood that that's the way it has to be.
This, by the way, this show today, episode 2853.
You've been around for a while. Hi, Chris.
My little brother was also a huge fan. I believe he went to your Denver live show a few years ago. He bought me a copy of your book for my birthday. Unfortunately, we lost him right after his 29th birthday in 2016.
Oh, man.
And during his last few weeks, 50% of what we talked about were our favorite Keith and the Girl moments.
Oh, I'm so glad you kept track of that. It's important to know that 50% of somebody's last words are Keith and the Girl.
I love you guys, and I think you're just amazing together. Keith is the funniest person I've ever come across, and you, Chemda, are so incredibly strong, intelligent, and inspiring.
I gotta be less of that and more funny. I gotta be less inspiring.
What's he gonna write? You're the second funniest? That's awkward. You're the most intelligent, strong, and inspiring.
All right. I'm three things the most.
Never good enough. My life is so much better having, quote, known you too. And I just want to say thanks. I seriously love Keith and the Girl. His name was John Blatchley. Thank you, Chris.
John Blatchley, this one's for you. This whole episode is dedicated to you. I'm sorry about any ignorance that we're about to spew. We love you so much. R.I.P.
R.I.P. But how can you, those of us that are alive, still R.I.P.? Well, I'll tell you how. Brook linen sheets for your bed. That's right, Chemda.
My hand just exploded.
I'm talking about the most comfortable sheets that I have ever used in my life. And that's the truth. And now as a single man, I'll tell you, I got to keep the floodgates open, right? These sheets get it done.
You know what? I do remember meeting John in Denver and he was like, you know what? You should try Brook linen sheets. Mm-hmm. And he kept meaning to get it.
Right.
And that's one of his biggest mistakes.
My Brook linen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive anniversary event happening this week only. It starts Thursday, April 26th. It goes on through Tuesday, May 1st. So that's the end.
Get on it.
May 1st, or you'll be paying like an asshole. Get free shipping and up to 20% off site-wide when you shop at brooklinen.com this week only. They rarely run events like this. If you know anything about them, you know good sheets, not a lot of events like this.
You wanted to, you've been meaning to go to a fun event. Here it is.
Oh, it's so fun. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night, listen to this, 60-night. So you're telling me. I don't want to tell you what my average is, okay? But you have women into your house. Try these sheets, get the vibe, send it back to them after 2 months if you're not completely satisfied. Here's the thing, though. You think, the joke's on Brooklinen. No. The joke's on us, because these are the best sheets you'll ever have. They got me. Hey, how about money back? I fuck your mom. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter what they say is my point, because you're going to love the sheets. But yes, you have the right to return them.
I love my sheets.
Yes, you do.
That's my contribution.
Mm-hmm.
I love my sheets.
See? The only way to get free shipping and 20% off site-wide is to go to brooklinen.com this week only. That's brooklinen.com. Brooklinen. And I'll say it again. These are the best sheets ever.
And John would have wanted you to buy it.
John would have wanted you to dip. Okay. Now, today's guest. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been about 13 years. John would know this person.
Oh, my God, he would.
Yeah.
Yeah. those of you who have been with us for the first, few months of the show, we haven't heard from this guy. He's gotten all big and his head got bigger, I think.
Ladies and gentlemen, the unintentional racist from Black-ish. You might know him if you followed his career earlier for the Phillips Norelco campaign body groom, so you can shave your own nuts.
Yeah.
Family couldn't be prouder. He talks to his dad. That's what's funny. Ladies and gentlemen, our buddy and yours, Jeff Meacham.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm good. Nothing beats a good segue from a man's death into a promotion for bedsheets.
It was all part of your intro.
Yeah. I feel like we're really setting the bar low here.
We wanted you to feel at home.
Well, first off, congrats with Black-ish.
Thanks, man.
Four seasons?
We just finished four seasons.
And we're looking at a fifth?
God, you're right. The last time we talked, I had no career.
Yeah.
I was known as the ball shaver guy.
You were also literally clowning around with us. We used to do kids' parties together.
I can't believe how many years ago that was. But yes, for many, many years.
For those who weren't listening for 13 years, all three of us used to do kids' parties together. We have a picture. What character was Jeff in?
Gomez. But not even just Gomez, because he's so handsome. They're like, you'll be Prince Gomez.
Right.
Him and his wife, gorgeous, gorgeous people. It's like, okay, Jeff, Christy, you're the king and queen of Walt Disney today. Kate, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
It's true. It was so annoying, actually. I remember me and Jeff were talking, and you were such an asshole to work with sometimes.
Oh, I was. Yes, I was the worst.
Such a dick. Because I was the grunt person. I was like, let's do double daring, right? And so I'd carry all this shit, and he's like
tunnels and slime.
Yeah. And I'm like, working my face off, and he's over there talking to the mom, and we get a $50 tip each. And I'm just like, I hate and love working with you because you just smile that stupid fucking smile of yours. And all the women, all the moms would be like, oh my God, Jeff. No. Then he starts telling me about other gigs that he's getting through the same agency that we're working from. Again, I'm always like go with the older kids. You know how to relate. Like, you're just a little grunt like they are. And this guy, he's like, yeah, I'm getting paid $1,000. They just want me to come up and wear this suit and just walk around. What were you playing? I think you were playing 007 or something.
I did a lot of 007 in the early days. Yeah, I did a lot of...
A suit.
But and you look like such like the all-American, you know.
That's what did it.
Yeah, and you're such a... dumb fuck. I remember you were just, because if you weren't handsome, you'd be a fucking pig.
My mom got me a card when I graduated from college that I wish I could remember what the front, but she found one that literally did say, congratulations. It looks like good looks and personality do take you place or something like that. Like, because my mom, your parent, that's always thing. Like, you can't just live off your good looks and your personality. And I was no, I literally got a degree in that. Literally went to school for that.
He would be so handsome in the front scene. Then we would go backstage, whatever that backstage was. He'd be fucking clipping his toenails while people are eating.
I'm disgusting on the inside.
So gross.
Yeah.
He's like, look, I'm just like you.
Yes.
But we don't clip our nails.
One of my fondest memories from kids' parties from the company we worked with, that just remember how gross I was or just how much I didn't pay attention, was it was early June, in New York, so it was still cold, but summer had was just starting to come, and we had this 6-hour party up in some super banana wealthy man, I heard he made hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Anyway, we had
the
main
Connecticut.
Jones guy. Remember him?
Oh,
yeah,
God.
And he had 8,000 different properties. And
yes.
Yeah.
He literally had a property on every continent.
We're not kidding.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
And the one in New York, just to give you an idea of how rich these people were, you would need a golf cart, of course, to get to their front door. Yep. So all the people who worked on their property had a golf cart and maneuvered around. There was a pool house, of course, all this kind of stuff. And in Halloween, they would open up their front yard, and their front yard was as big as 20 people's homes.
Easily.
And you would walk up to their front door and be greeted by literally 100 characters. Everybody who worked for this agency was called. You had,
and sometimes they weren't there. They weren't there for the Halloween party. He would just throw it for the neighborhood, but they would go somewhere else. So a $50,000 party, just go.
That's on the low end.
And
they had
for sure.
Great sense of humor. One of their Halloween parties, they really knew how to party. They were so much fun.
Yeah.
So when you got to the door, a lookalike, and this is the official lookalike who would do tours and things,
for
a lookalike
real.
Of who Bush and Clinton
sure.
were there, whoever was rival. Of voting at the time or whatever, and you would either get your candy from from one or the other, depending on your affiliation. And we were in Connecticut, so we knew who was getting candy from who.
And those people were for real, and they must have gotten paid like $1,000 for that night, and the rest of us would make like $200 and be dressed up like the Slimer to just be standing there. But this one in particular, I was Superman. They had a very low-cut Superman costume. And I'm a hairy guy, and so before I shave everywhere, I just like woke up that morning and I was like, ah, shit, my hair. So I shaved my chest just enough, but of course I didn't put any sunscreen on. So I truly affected my body. Like, I really messed myself up for an entire summer. I had a burn line on my chest that looked like it was the worst. It was just like this half-shaven chest, and I was wearing this weird Superman leotard. And
but I think also you were just guessing at where Superman would end, and so you only shaved the top, and then every once in a while you'd have to pick up your suit because some of your hair would stick out of the top. But still, the face would make him go away, and people were just like, oh my God, he is Superman. I wanted to puke, except that we got such good tips when he was around.
We did get good tips.
Yeah, I've worked that party, and they're like, all right, you're Batman. And they're like, oh, I can still see your eyes. Okay, you're also SpongeBob. I'm like, this is getting offensive.
We were the gremlins that worked around Jeff.
Yeah.
And then his wife was just like, God, she's like a beauty queen, but like, and the nicest person. It was so annoying. Like,
and she hated working with me too, by the way.
Oh, really?
She hated working with me
because
I didn't like working with other people. I just like to get do my own thing. And if someone interrupted me, I was like, God damn it, this is my gig. Shut up, Cinderella, and do what I tell you to do.
I face paint. I love interruptions. I'm like, oh, 1 second, I have an interruption.
Yeah. Do you guys know you probably don't, that the fun tie to where my career's going now with Tracee Ellis Ross and her mom and stuff like that? I'll tell you.
Okay.
So on Black-ish, Tracee Ellis Ross, whose mother is famously Diana Ross. So the company we worked for.
I remember meeting her because we did a Diana Ross party.
There you go.
That's how you got in.
Well, no.
Because I believe you.
Could you imagine if I did?
I believe you.
I booked it because I used to be a Diana Ross. No. So Diana.
Hey, remember when I wouldn't help you during the party?
Yeah.
Well, who might have an Emmy?
Just like when I met Tracy after booking the show, I, you know, eventually went up to her during once the show had gotten picked up and I knew I was like part of it. And I was like, hey, do you know a woman named Brett Galley by any chance? She runs this company called Hollywood Pop. And she's like, yeah, my mother's given that woman hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, well, I used to work for her. And she was like, you mean you used to come to my mom's house? And I was like, yeah, I remember once I was a French fop at her front door. My job and Max Darwin's job was we stood at their front door and just greeted people. That was it. We did that for an entire evening. Just be like, oh, welcome to the house. And that was it. We did that for hours.
Hemda and I moved Diana Ross because she didn't trust regular movers. So we were going through all her stuff. So
is this for real?
Yeah. So if you're one of those people into her clothes or her jewelry, I touched it all.
Yeah.
No way.
We were going through all of this memorabilia.
Through Hollywood Pop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, you can't make that up. You can't make that shit up. I don't trust.
Why would
you
want to? I moved Diana Ross.
Right. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. So, so that's how we first met.
She has a bowling alley.
Does she really?
An attitude. No, she's the best. She's the best.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, she's great. She's Diana Ross.
Totally grounded.
Totally normal.
How could you not be?
Completely normal. When Hemda slips on ice, the first thing to do is to say, explain how it's your fault so that you don't sue.
Yeah.
Earlier, you'll remember I said it was icy. Yeah, we remember.
I am clumsy, Miss Ross. Thank you for letting me be here.
It is my fault.
Can I shake your hand again?
She'd show like, this was the first outfit I wore, the first time I was at the Apollo. Should I throw it out? I'm like, yeah, you got plenty.
Oh, yeah, she was going through her outfits with us. I was like, you're fucking with me, right?
Wait, is this for real?
Yes.
Yeah.
We spent
to
a day.
You?
There.
Yeah, hey, this is Picasso. He painted a picture of me and Michael Jackson. Should I keep it or I got to make space? Yeah, throw it out in the back. Then I just leave with the big bag. I still don't know what to do with it.
Your eBay account is just, you're a millionaire on eBay.
Yeah. You don't need all those bowling balls in your bowling alley. Yeah.
I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was Diana Ross or what, because we did a lot in Connecticut. There are a lot of rich, famous people that
super rich
this
people.
Agency was connected to. And every once in a while, we would get one of these things that we have to sign. Like, yes, you're doing this famous person's kid's party, but they will be there and do not look in their eyes.
Yeah, don't communicate with them. It's true.
Do you have one of those now? Because I'm looking straight in your eyes.
I will. As soon as I'm number one on the call sheet, I am done with anybody I know. Anybody.
When you first moved to LA, did you feel that shift that people talk about, because you were now like competing for different things than you were in New York, or maybe the same, but on a different
field? I can answer that on two levels. Like, one, there is a true difference between New York and LA, and the people and the personalities and the actors. And, you know, in New York, you're never surrounded by the business, right? Call it, you know, acting or the out here, just the business. Like, New York is this, its own entity, and you had to find it. You had to be part of it and get your way.
You had to opt in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Here, it's everything. It's every person in my kid's school is a writer on this, or a director on this, or a producer.
Like,
or,
for real, like how we hear about
But because that's what LA is. I mean, LA, you know, the predominant business here is the business of making film and television. So everybody is associated with it in some capacity. So you can never escape it. You can never, ever escape it. So you felt that immediately when you got out here. That
what does that feel like when you first come here? Are you like, good, I need to be surrounded by this, I need to be focused on it?
Yeah, I did, because we loved the East Coast. Our family is back there. We are East Coasters by heart. I say we mean me and my wife. So we knew when we came out here and we moved to Silver Lake right off of two highways. So it was exactly what people had talked about. Like, it was terrifying. It looked like I was staring into a highway desert. That's two things that I couldn't dislike anymore. The desert, oh, by the way, is the worst. Like, you know when people are like, oh, I just want to go out to the desert. Are you fucking kidding? This is the desert. None of this is real. None of LA is real. If they stop watering things, this whole town dies. Like, that's what's so amazing. So when people are like, ah, LA is fake, it is in that regard. Like, it's,
did you try, like, I'm going to go out to the desert and try to feel what they feel?
No, fuck that. Oh, no, okay. I would go to Vegas with my buddies, and then we would like go hike out in the desert for like half a day, and I'd be like, this is terrifying. So yeah, you know, we kind of said to each other, like, okay, we're here to be successful, to make the career happen that we want to. And that's why we're here. And we still, to this day, talk about maybe not living here. Like, what would be better than being that famous where it's just like, yeah, I live in Colorado, but, you know, they fly me in for whatever.
By the way, right now, Greg, how many kids do you have? Three? Two?
Two.
This is smart timing, because then she has to raise the kids. And you're like, you know, who knows how big my window's going to be? Gotta go to work. Strike one of that. We keep saying how it all might end.
Yep. You never know. You never know whatsoever. Yeah. No, and there's no hostility with that kind of thing. Everything's fine. Just raise the kids while I go and be an actor.
This will be my turn, and then I'll watch the kids, it'll be your turn.
Yeah, when they're 17 and 16. Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy experience. I can't believe it.
Two boys.
One 5 and a half and one who will be two in a few weeks.
Do they show a proclivity to anything?
Yeah. The oldest is absolutely the creative. I can see him already just like being like one of those Dungeons and Dragons kids. Like, he just lives in the kind of world of like wanting to create and build and care less about sports. And then the other one, who's not even two, is riding scooters. He sees tennis. He goes, tennis. He sees basketball. He says, basketball. Like, it just, that's the sports kid.
Well, I don't know. I hate to say something negative, but I saw your kid on a scooter on Instagram.
Yeah.
Not one. It's I don't know what you're proud about. Not one.
He's not even two.
He's not even one. He's not even 6 months. It wouldn't matter.
What do you mean?
You have to put your foot on the scooter.
Yeah, he can. He can.
I didn't see it.
What are you talking about? He's not even two.
Okay, so don't act like he just did it.
But do I mean...
Fucking acting like he's Shaun White. I saw it. It's sad.
When did Shaun... Okay. All right.
Oh, look at it. You're like, oh, look at this. And I'm like, you can't trick me with your Yoda words. I see it. His other foot is on the ground the whole time.
No. Well, it's hard for me to hold the phone and scoot at the same time, too.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at 10 seconds of this child's
picture
life.
Picture I can see both these people with their one foot on the ground.
Oh. You guys follow us on Instagram.
Yeah. And that, oh, man. And that's the, look at this. Look at this guy knows about my kid's life because of Instagram.
Yeah, weird,
I mean,
right?
How much have you guys talked about that on the, I mean, it's changed everything, right?
Like, yeah, of course it changed everything. Social media, yeah. Do you get nervous about it? Like, hey, should I not put a picture of my kids?
Here's why I get... Okay, so two things to that. My wife, of course, doesn't like that. She wants it to keep it more private. And I'm like, I'm a guy. I'm never going to be this like mega sex symbol where I don't think people are going to be like, oh my, need to see Jeff Meacham's kids in any way. I'm way more open about stuff. So I'm not too worried about that. I can imagine if you were, I don't know, Angelina Jolie. That must be a different experience than showing every day of your life with your kids.
He's like, did you just catch that, by the way? Hmm. Jeff couldn't even pick out a more attractive man. He had to go to a whole different sex.
He's just
being honest.
We were all thinking he was going to say Brad Pitt.
He is the go-to, though, isn't he?
Right.
Yeah, I even went to his you know, wife or ex-wife. Like, it's he is always the go-to.
Probably, I don't know, somebody Brad knows.
Yeah, I'm telling you. As if I'm even on any plane close to these people. Everything that I just made last year, Brad Pitt made right now. But he's, wait, right now. Yeah. Just,
I mean, I guess if Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt have a kid together,
yeah,
maybe that kid. Oh, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, you get my point. Shit, I forgot what I was saying.
You were saying that they're not going to hound you like they are Angelina Jolie.
About having your kids on Instagram.
About having my kids on Instagram. But what was my second? My second point was the main point, too, like why I love doing it.
Well, one was Christy.
I don't remember. I don't remember. So I honestly don't remember. I'll think of it. What, to put my kids on Instagram?
We just got to the bottom of it.
We got it. You're right. I shouldn't put my kids on Instagram. God damn it.
Is it getting them dates or something?
I mean, that's what people, I like. I mean, if you want to meet a good 5.5-year-old, he's got a good head of hair. He's sweet, you know, upper middle class. He's good to go.
Where's the second kid getting the sports stuff from?
I have no idea. That's the thing. That's the
and
amazing.
Who cares? And who cares?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I put it on TV, but you know, it's.
All I know is I've been working more than ever, and my kid is turning into Sammy Sosa. I love it. Who cares? Who cares?
Oh my God, we show our age when we say Sammy Sosa.
Right.
But I mean, I put them on all the time because it's just. They say cute, you know. It's a kids say the darndest, you guys.
Right, they
are adorable.
They really do.
They call me Bob.
You put their names out there, right? One of them is named Hudson.
Hudson.
Is that because of the New York reference?
You know, we're gonna go with Henry Hudson, but that was and then we kept writing it.
We're gonna call one Henry and the other Hudson.
Could you imagine? That'd
kill
be
you.
Awesome. That would be so awesome. We love New York. Are you guys from there? Sort of. I mean, I'm from Connecticut. She's from Indiana, but whatever.
But here's my boy, Verrazano.
Yeah.
That is a cool name.
That is. My boy, Queensboro. Right. He's a good kid.
You include it all.
My child, Astoria.
This is my child, Joseph.
I mean, that's where
Koch, formerly the...
Go that deep.
Forget about it.
I like it. No, we kept seeing the name Hudson. This is the sad part about second child syndrome. Our first kid, name is Jack. He has the same initials as me. Jack is the nickname for John. Her dad is John, as well as her brother. Like so many things with Jack's name. Hudson, we're like, we like it. Like, that's the sad thing with a second kid. You feel bad. Your first kid's got this root of like, oh, this is your name. It has so much heritage to our family. And Dad, what's Hudson mean? It means it's cool.
Don't you like saying it?
Yeah, yeah. Kid? We like your name a lot, right? Yeah. We met in New York. It's after the river.
Dad, I did some research. The Hudson River is disgusting. Hudson Hawk is terrible. You're a piece of shit.
People brought up Hudson Hawk a lot. Again, kids of the 80s and 90s, man. Everyone's like, cool, Bruce Willis. I was like, no.
About 20 years ago,
yeah,
I believe, you had an acting coach that said, hey, these you want to be an actor, look at these people in Hollywood. And then the references, of course, are older. Robert Redford, this kind of thing.
Right.
Look how thin they look. And you have love handles and you have to do something
about it.
Oh,
my God. How do you remember this?
And you had developed an eating disorder.
Yeah.
Bulimia, right?
Yeah.
Does that creep up now?
Wow. God, you made a good segue there. Yeah, it is.
I love when people point out segues.
Right.
13 years in, never gets old. Yes.
You are good at it, though. That is a fantastic segue.
Wait until you hear his comebacks.
Come on, now you say something. Watch this.
I liked it. I mean, the way you segue from the dead guy to the sheets and now from my kids to my bulimia. It's solid. It's solid.
Baby weight, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
How that affects people.
It did. It fucked with me so much. You guys, oh my God, when my first kid was born or when Christy was pregnant, the doctor said the worst thing to her that could have affected me ever, which was they were like, oh, we think the baby might be a little underweight, so you need to eat more. So I would buy like a pizza, and Christy, of course, being who she is, she would eat a slice and I would finish the pie. Like, you know, it was the worst. It was the worst. Okay, so how do I answer that? Yeah, it'll be a lifelong struggle for me of of dealing with of bulimia and just food in general. Like I have come to the realization in my 30s, even though I'm on my last year of my 30s now, that food, I just view it as a drug. It's a drug. If I can look at it like a drug, then I can treat it completely differently, right? Then I can, when I look at Panda Express, as people would laugh at that name, being like, oh, that's funny that that affects you in that way.
But that's a trigger.
But that is a trigger. Yeah. That to me is a drug. That is no different than a heroin addict seeing, you know, heroin. And so.
Except you get your heroin like at the, at Best Buy at the counter, right when you're paying and yep. you, and there's heroin billboards everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people.
And Dunkin' Donuts is on every corner.
Every corner. And that's the thing about food is that people, you know, you can make jokes about it in that way that, yeah, exactly. Drugs are these scary things, and they and so, my God, it's terrifying that.
And you have to have heroin three times a day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, exactly, exactly. So if I can treat it that way, if I can deal with it that way, my life gets a little bit easier at times. Mm-hmm. Like, look, I just came out of 3 months just now, to beginning of this year, 2018. I've been. You brought up a reference to 20 years ago. You know, the first time I made myself throw up was definitely in. It was in college, was right around that time. And then didn't, you know, no one knew about it for umpteenth amount of years. And then, you know, and then I finally started telling people. And then, of course, like anything, that died out. And then it just became part of my life. Like, it was never something that I did on a daily basis. It was, I am a total, I am your prototypical binge and purger, right? Like, binge on a shitload of food, hit a trigger, just be like, well, I guess now. Like, this is the crazy. Maybe this is also a guy thing too, but might be different than many females that are bulimics, is that I almost treated it like a game, right? Like, if I hit that click, right? If I wasn't consciously paying attention, I'm at a Chili's and I'm just housing some food and the click would just hit. And the click meaning that I would pass a line and that line would be like, okay, well, now you're definitely going to go throw this up. So now you can just fuck this restaurant up. Yeah. So I would do that. I would do that. And that would be the binging part of my life. And, you know, people don't see the affect, right? Again, I use heroin as a reference because you see somebody's what's happening to them in front of them. The only thing you see with me is maybe weight gain, but you don't see.
And also the encouragement is different. Like, if you see the effects of heroin, you start getting concerned. Sometimes if you see the effects of an eating disorder, you're like, you look so good.
Yeah.
And so it's a very weird, and also people use it as love. So it's like, yes. Eat my food, come eat with me. It's like,
yeah.
Sort of, it's almost worse than alcohol, because even alcohol is like, hey, meet me at a bar, let's go for a drink,
right.
let's sign this contract over drinks, let's clink on drinks because we signed the contract.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Everything is celebrating with alcohol and also with food. Yep. And food can be so emotional, people could be insulted if you're not eating, like they have emotional ties to your eating. So
absolutely,
it's such a weird addiction to have.
It really
because
is.
It could so easily be joked about, but our food, even though FDA approves, the FDA is a motherfucker. They also approve cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting what we've been put in front of us. Like, here, have a bowl of sugar and call it breakfast, and it's right. part of your nutritious breakfast. That got signed off by lawyers. Lawyer said that's okay and it's not addictive, and the FDA said go ahead and feed it to your children.
Yeah.
So you have to, like, reroute, and people who are our age, we remember pasta was a diet food. Mm-hmm. Potato. I remember women bringing potatoes to work to put them in the microwave and not adding anything, no sour cream, no anything,
right.
because that's it. So all the bland foods, your potatoes, your breads, everything that's avoided now
yeah.
was what we were told, hey, go ahead and eat this. Eat sugar instead of fat. Eat fake sugar instead of fat. And those are all we discovered 10, 20 years
yeah.
later are the things that are making us fat, but we already got addicted and used to it.
Oh, so good. That's
yeah.
so unbelievably true. Yeah. Yes, thank you for saying that. I mean, there's so many levels to what would happen with me with food. But, you know, the other part too is people have heard me out in the world talk about my laziness, right? I talk about this side of me, and I almost play it up as well as like being like, oh, I can be a really lazy guy. Well, the bulimia also came out of that, was that I didn't want to work out all the time. I wasn't, they
it
didn't
was
have
the
to,
shortcut.
Yeah, it was the shortcut. Exactly. And so once I came into what we joked about earlier, which was becoming a good-looking man, so to speak, and then getting jobs like it, definitely during those years of, especially in the early 2000s, of getting jobs where I had to wear a leotard or something like that. I was mortified because I always had chub on me in some kind of way. I was terrified. And so, yeah, I would go to the gym, but then I would eat twice as much of that. Mm. So I had no idea what I was doing.
Right. Going to the gym makes you very hungry.
Oh, very hungry. It
empties out a lot of things.
Yeah, and it's a huge reward, too. It's a huge rewarding thing. That's the other thing, too. Food is a reward, so you reward yourself with this. Anyway, I mean, yeah, I had a routine. I had a routine for years, especially in New York. You know, whatever. I'd play a sport hard or something like that. I'd go and get $70 worth of sushi and then just throw it up. And that would be my MO for an extended period of time.
And that, honestly, like, as you're talking, I'm like, that sounds like such a fun party.
It was.
You know, because I have the same or similar addiction, you know, and it really is that moment before I put it in my mouth.
Yeah.
I have to talk to myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate that talk because I'm like, ignore, just shove it in your face. And, you know, so that's why I go up and down in weight when I talk to myself before I eat. Then I eat better. I think about it. You know, it's that moment. Like, let me just have this shot. And then after that, nothing.
Right.
But it's the same with food. It's like, let me have a little bit of sushi. Sushi's good for you. It's healthy. It's,
totally.
You know, and then it's like, oh, how am I full? Like, I can sometimes feel it right in my throat. Like, I actually got that full.
Yeah.
Gross. And then you want it again.
Yeah.
And then when I don't feel full at the end of the meal, I'm like, oh, I miss feeling full.
Yes.
But I have to stop now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Yeah. You know, oh my God, just eating the mic.
Oh my God, you guys, there's a sushi joint right up the street. You mentioned something earlier too, and this is a huge one, is everybody has an opinion on food. Everybody's an expert in some kind of way. Everybody at this point knows about a diet plan and stuff.
There are food channels.
There are food
24 hours.
24
watch
hours.
Watch me eat food. Watch me go buy food. Watch me make food. Watch me sell food.
Yes.
Watch me just eat at my grandma's house. Watch me eat at your grandma's house. Watch me compete with food.
Yep. You are absolutely right. Everything that we follow on social media, you know, there's a bagillion different diets. So I don't, you guys bringing it up right now is so wonderful because you're bringing it up to me. I would never bring it up to anybody. Never. I would never tell somebody unless they asked me about bulimia or eating disorder, something like that. And it is funny, man. It is so funny when people, I'm like, you know, when also you look at my body and you look at me, I can't tell you how many times people are like, but you look fine.
I hate
you're
that.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Of course. You know?
I mean,
you're
yeah.
right. I'm not obese. You're right.
You are fine. Of course you're fine.
Right.
And if you gain 20 pounds, you're still fine.
Sure.
But
sure.
But putting your pants on in the morning and sweating is not feeling good.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
you
like
know?
Wearing, you know, a different outfit that you didn't want to wear because the other outfit, you just don't feel good, and that's where you're not fine. It's the psychological. Like, I understand that you still find me attractive and want to have sex with me.
Right.
Great.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Right.
I'm so glad that you approve.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing too is about a drug is that you don't talk to people about drugs. You don't say, I'm doing this drug, right? So like even my own wife didn't know that maybe at some points on a daily basis, at some, you know, many points in my life, I couldn't go from point, just like an alcoholic, I could not go from point A to point B without needing something. Meaning if I had to go from work to home, I would stop at Trader Joe's and buy a bag of blank and finish it and then throw it in the trash. But not in my own trash. I would drive around the corner and throw it in. And so it took me a very long time to say, oh my God, I'm doing the same things as a drug addict would. I'm hiding this addiction. I'm not telling you that I'm doing this. I didn't, even though it's called Cowboy Bark and it's a funny name.
Oh, that's so good. It's from Trader
good.
Joe's.
Yeah.
Oh,
anything
with
a pretzel and chocolate and peanut butter to get, I have a full blown erection right now.
So good.
Right now.
I just came. Oh, yeah. So good.
So, you know, there you go. Like, it's again, because it's this light hearted thing, it's hard to say that it was a drug, but it is.
Yeah, and
so.
It's Trader Joe's. It's clean living.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. By the way, everybody.
Dark chocolate. What? Ugh,
everything in Trader Joe's food has sugar. Look in the ingredients on the back. Everything in Trader Joe's is sugar. That's why that place is so good.
When we did clown parties, did you have bulimia then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was probably the height of it because I go to college. I see all these guys older than me at this, you know, this conservatory for theater, these good looking guys going off into the business. And then as I get a little older, they're starting to get careers. And I'm like, well, I don't look like those guys. That teacher you talk about that told me I don't look like Paul Newman, all I wanted to do is look like him. And I had no idea what to do. So then I get out. Now I'm this 22-year-old that's got to go do these parties where every character, 80% of the characters I'm playing are supposed to be these good looking guys. Right. You know, so yeah, that was easily the height of it because also I'm a 22-year-old that wants to drink and party and have fun with my friends, but keep in good shape, but I don't really know what I'm doing. Oh man, I was throwing up.
Did you throw up at other people's houses?
Sure. Look for at that. Sure.
So you're telling me.
Between parties. So if I'd go from a party, because let's say I had a four-party day,
right.
And you as the dad offers me pizza, I was able to get past really quickly because every party had pizza. But what I couldn't get past is...
I still
is,
couldn't get past pizza.
Yeah. Well, of course, that smell is insane. But, yeah.
But I stayed in New York. Continue.
Exactly. But, you know, whatever. I don't know why this comes to my mind, but, you know, a dad will offer you a hamburger, yeah. You know, from the party. Oh, I'll take this before you go. I'd Ralph that down. And then I said Ralph. And then, you know... Ralph it back up, you know, on the way to the next one. Right. Yeah.
Would you ever do it, but outside? But sometimes you would do it in their nice Connecticut home?
I've done it everywhere. I've done it.
A toilet's a toilet, buddy.
Every if it's your toilet, if I'm in my car and I needed to, I would pull over by a dumpster and do it.
Absolutely. So if you could shit in it, he could throw in it.
Well, I'm thinking of a time when they put out the good cake and it was the end of it. And Jeff took the final piece. But turns out he didn't even enjoy it like I would.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's interesting.
I'm sorry.
Look at how people speak without a heroin addiction. He's so annoying. Let me tell you how annoying Keith is, okay? You're gonna throw up and not enjoy it, okay? He will eat something, okay? And there will be like 3 bites left. He'll throw his napkin in. He's done. Yeah, no, I mean, why overeat?
You mean the scrapies? You don't?
I don't eat the scrapies. I don't eat handles on pizza.
You know what else? He'll only eat chips. If he's eating a sandwich, and when the sandwich is done, even though there are chips left in the one person singular, you know, bag,
yep.
Oh, he'll put the chip bag right away. He's done with his sandwich. There's no more chips needed.
Because you need the right amount of mixture.
Just throw yourself out a window. You're very annoying.
There's a distance growing between us really quickly here. Really quickly here.
But he had to stop drinking. Anyway.
Yeah. See, everybody's got their thing. Right. Everybody's got their thing.
No, I've thrown up in other people's places. Yeah.
Mine was like really conscious, you know. I had to do an act to make it happen.
He just had to sober up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was looking up when Jeff was on our show before, and he was on a live show and also a studio show, but it was on so far back that... it looks like we don't have show notes for that show. I couldn't even find it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you, guys. I did it.
I remember Jeff was telling a story about a person that we worked for, and the boyfriend was a drunk and was drunk walking the dog as he was mowing the lawn.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we're going to bring it up.
Yeah. He wasn't walking the dog.
No, he was mowing the lawn in a riding mower, I believe.
Yes.
And the dog was tied to, like, the tree or something.
No, the dog was tied to the... lawnmower.
No, it was not. Was it tied to
the
lawnmower? And then it got sucked in, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it was. Yeah. All I know is that he did. Look, let's, without getting specific, because we know she'll never listen to this podcast, that man fucking mowed a dog. And that's what we know.
And this was a dog, like she was pregnant and she was calling her first baby her second kid because of that dog.
Yeah. That dog was her everything.
Oh, yeah.
That's that woman that we see in the movies, or that guy with the little poodle and they're petting it. And they're like that meant that was, oh, my God, I forgot about that. I love that we brought that up.
She would throw birthday parties for the dog. Yep. Like not a regular, like, just come over to my house. We'll have some pizza or whatever.
Yeah.
No, in a dog party place with party favors, with like things to do for other dogs.
Everybody got a dog. Like, what if we can't handle it that day? Oh.
And that man fucking mowed a dog. He mowed it. He sucked it in and chopped it to pieces. Right. That is horrible. And it's still one of
you laugh every time.
Every time it's insane.
It is insane.
It's insane that happened. Oh my God. How do you even make that phone call? Hey, babe.
Yeah.
You know, we lost Penny.
And then, like, wait until she comes home.
Okay, I gotta get sober. Like, Ralph.
Exactly. Ralph. You know he was drunk, so yeah.
My friend's in another state, and he called me, and I have to die. Oh God.
Yeah. Do you make up that there was a home invasion, and all they took was the dog, and just clean up the lawn real quick? The dog ran away. Anything?
Oh my God, the blood.
Oh my God.
So much blood.
By the way, when you go to the Emmys or MTV
good segue.
Awards,
nice
segue. Thank you.
No, I don't throw up on my way.
Okay. No. First of all, do you have an Emmy in your house? If the show won an Emmy,
no, we haven't won.
No.
No, we've never won.
Well,
Blackish is the Blackish.
Oh boy!
Oh goodness! Oh,
boy. Now, I can't believe they never won. What an incredible! I hate sitcoms, and I'm sure you get this a lot, but Blackish is brilliant.
Thank you. It's brilliant,
and I was actually surprised that it kept going because the name was so controversial and so fucked up, like, in a, you know, because
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
so. anti what it is, like seemingly anti, but it's so brilliant and so funny, and the characters, everyone's so good in it. But how do you feel on such a progressive, wonderful show, so smart, so funny? You're the racist.
I'm not the racist. Ooh, and no, that's a great,
the unintentional
racist.
The
other guy, Peter McKenzie's character, who plays our boss, is the racist, and that is what they do with that character. So we are both viewed as two wealthy, you know, upper class. He's super upper class. He's the rich white. He represents the old rich white men that literally didn't know any better and just said racist stuff and are racist and sexist. Yeah, the old school, you know, Don Draper type, but just even, and we do, we work in an ad agency.
But wouldn't you be the one who's trying to, like, because you try, like, hey, high five sort of thing.
I'm
like,
the one that's always cool. Trying to fit in and try, like, there's
racist.
Yeah, there's the loser white guy that doesn't know, that just doesn't have a clue and is ignorant. And that brings up the main argument. Is it racist if it doesn't come from a place of hate?
I'll tell you why it's racist. It's racist because people are responding to you and you're ignoring it and not realizing, like, there's why is there a Black Lives Movement? Why is there whatever? So yes, it's ignorant until, you know, you're clearly like 40 and everyone's been responding to you this way and you're the only one who has the privilege to not have to look that up. And you have to look up what it is and why you're racist.
I am the true essence of white privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fact that you don't know, as your character, of course, that it's racist is racism.
Yeah, right? When I got Fs in school, I didn't get to go, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know this new math. I don't know it.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that. No,
I'm
you're
old
right.
school, plus, minus, divided by, if you don't get too crazy.
But there's something to be said about ignorant comments, right? Yeah. So you can say an ignorant comment and then people could look at you funny and then you have to stop.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, and Josh doesn't do that. Yeah. Josh doesn't know any better. And there's so many people that are like that just don't see it, you know, don't you know those guys, you know, when you meet those people, like, what, one of the things I love about Josh is that he in every way should be somebody who has friends, has a girlfriend or a wife or somebody in his life that, like, should be cool, and he's not. And it's because it all boils down to what we're talking about, the ignorance, just not being self-aware. He's just not self-aware.
Because he never had to be. Because he'll still get the job. He'll still get
absolutely
the things that he needs enough.
Got and to then, go to Harvard just because.
Yeah. And then know. Also, it's like, why don't I get everything I want? Even though you have a job, you went to Harvard, like all this stuff, you still see yourself as, how come I don't? How come this guy's hired? How come I don't?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I was wondering, because what a character to have as, like, a nice person.
Yeah.
Do you, and I've heard, like, years ago, like the soap opera, somebody, you know, threw water in someone's face because they mistook the character for
the
human being. So I imagine that you get a lot of,
I get exactly the question you asked, and that's it really for the question, like, what's it like playing a racist on TV? And my defense, or to have this discussion, which is what is supposed to happen on the show, is this discussion. And that's the best part.
But
is
nobody treats you like,
oh, of course not. No, because no. Josh is like most people, like Josh, black or white, because what they see in him is that sad part of just wanting to fit in, right? A lot of people recognize that side of just wanting to be cool. Like Josh looks up to Dre so much because Dre represents everything cool, Anthony Anderson's character. Like, he is the essence of having all the cool things in life. And I get to work at this ad agency with these cool guys, but I'm not at all of you. My character is the one who's mostly shit on. And throughout the run of the show now, my character's even more and more got shit on. So people sympathize with Josh almost more than worry about his racist side.
Yeah. I didn't expect so much compassion.
Yeah, there's a lot of compassion for Josh.
Yeah.
Because also in the office is this racist man.
So does he get shit? I don't know if you could speak to him.
I can't speak on, I can't. Yeah, like Peter's just, he just, I don't know. He lives it. He's awesome. He's great. He's just, I don't know.
I've watched like most of the season.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. And so, and it's so good.
And on top of that, also don't forget, no matter what you're asking the deeper next level question. For the most part, you know, Josh and, oh my God, I can't believe I'm forgetting Dion and Peter's character's name in this moment, Charlie and Mr. Stevens, right? Are we still mostly represent whatever's going on in Dre's life. He comes to the office, discusses it. We give him the wrong advice. So people still predominantly watch the first level of the shallower level of what's going on. You're asking the next level thing where we bring up these situations. And what's fascinating as being what probably the most amazing episode I got to be part of was the God episode, because how I view God as myself being Jeff Meacham, I don't really need God in my life, right? I don't. Josh is the same exact way. And what I was able to, my character actually verbalized it, which was, what did I say? I said something like, they were talking about God, and I said, oh, I don't really need God. I've got my gym membership and my blankety blank, because I didn't need it in my life, because I had white privilege, right? Even if I was middle class or lower middle class, I didn't have to worry about much. Still didn't have to. And that was a great argument in that episode, which was...
So your character probably doesn't get a lot of shit because it's finally like people admitting how they really are. So you're saying what we assume you're thinking anyway, or what Josh would be thinking anyway, and what the boss would be thinking anyway.
Absolutely.
I'm very bad at remembering characters.
It's great. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in the office, we're often having a discussion with 1,000 different points of view, or 4 different points of view. So all you're really doing as an audience member is sitting there hearing these, you know, again, with the gun violence episode, that was an amazing one, because there's
such a good one
about talking about,
how did you not win an Emmy just for that?
Oh, how did, I mean, the fact that the Lemons episode, which was the Donald Trump inauguration episode, didn't get nominated for Kenyon Barris writing that.
I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it.
Jeff, it's a travesty.
It's a fucking travesty that it went to probably another episode of Veep.
They didn't sideline. I mean, Veep is great.
It's an amazing show.
But they didn't like go around any of the topics. They didn't, I mean, just they
dove in.
In one episode. Yeah. So good. Okay.
And that's why that's what's so amazing about this show, is having the office where you can have those different points of view, right? You are allowed to, when else could on a show that's supposed to be about a black family in modern day Los Angeles, have these white points of view is the best. That's what makes the show so interesting.
Do you guys ever riff? Is there ever like any kind of writing or
that question improv? Gets asked to us all the time. The writing is so good that we don't need to riff as much. Yes, we absolutely do improvise. Dion Cole probably improvises the most. Peter McKenzie comes up. Peter will tag a scene with the most. He just got one of his riffs in. This man makes references to running a train through women like you wouldn't believe. It's the most awful thing to say, because that's what that character would say. And for the first time ever, this girl walked by in the office and he goes, oh, a lot of horses have run on that track. And always at the end of the, like, they'll call cut and we're like, oh, Peter, why are you saying these things? And finally they put it into an episode and we're like, okay, Peter got one in finally.
He can be proud of his horse.
Yeah. And Dion's character is so, the character of Charlie is so zany and so insane that he can talk about whatever. And that's what makes him so.
He feels like he was a little hired because his comedy is that he can tap into that through his actual comedy, his actual writing.
He is a true genius, in the sense that he, if you were to talk to him at times, he would be like, I mean, he could be so dumb about certain things. He just doesn't know certain things. And then he just turns on that improv mind and it's insane. It's insane.
You can see that in the show. Yeah.
He's crazy.
What does Josh think about Black Panther?
The movie?
Yeah.
Oh, Josh would want to be in Black Panther. Josh would want to be, think it's so cool. Josh wishes he would be a soldier standing next to, you know,
and he wouldn't understand why he couldn't be.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I could be in everything else. It still is a black movie. There's so many black characters in it.
Yeah.
I would just be the one.
He would think they were awesome. Yeah.
Don't you need my perspective? Everyone needs my perspective.
And it was. Yeah.
You only look more black next to me.
Yeah.
I'm Josh.
I wish I could be like one of the 300 guys, but with the Black Panther guys.
By the way, this does need mentioned. Bill Cosby was found guilty in court. And what I think is interesting about this is that now it's understood finally that Bill Cosby is guilty. There was all the proof. There was all the, and by proof I mean corroborators, people.
Over 70 women
rating,
coming out?
Over 70 women coming out, people rating, you know, people that would give the checks from Bill Cosby to the women.
Security
for a
people.
Night of rape. Yeah, that's so many things and people involved, but I don't know, why are they only coming out now, et cetera.
Everyone's against him. They want to take him down.
But now that a jury did say he is in fact guilty, boom, things are, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But all people are, I mean, this is good, don't get me wrong, but all people are reading is the headline, he was found guilty. It's like, yep, okay, guilty.
Yep.
Done.
Yep. I saw an argument today. Again, this is just through Instagram. I don't, you know, I'm not paying a ton of attention, but this was just an interesting one, of course. Always coming down to the black and the white issue here was a black man is found guilty for his sexual assault. A white man is a president for his sexual assault. And I thought that was an interesting argument that was put out.
For sure.
Don't want to put them in the same categories in sense of what it turns out Bill Cosby did. I don't know if, you know,
no,
Trump
has
done, but
it adds extra shit to it. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's part of why I think a lot of people in, you know, probably including me, were hesitant, like, no, not Bill Cosby.
Right.
Not, like, please anybody but Bill Cosby. Right. You know, it's just, you just don't want to.
Yeah.
But
and for us, that's our childhood, man. That is our entire, that is a huge part of our childhood was that. So it's crazy.
But I'm starting to wonder, what are the rules in comedy clubs? What should they be? Because we're always taught not to videotape the performer. Thank God somebody videotaped Hannibal Buress. We're told not to heckle. I saw the movie The Big Sick. That's how they got together and found love. She heckled him. I don't know what you can and can't do, but we caught one of the most horrific people in this world, and that one dude found love.
Wait. What do you mean? Did he get...
Hannibal Buress, the comedian, almost flippantly...
There were a bunch of waves, so it was in the comedy community. People would mention it, maybe a blog, maybe even the news.
Oh, but I see what you're saying. Oh, talk about this.
Yeah, but one of the major waves that actually started everything, like staying on Bill Cosby, is somebody filmed a Hannibal Buress set randomly in the back of a club, and he told a joke about how Cosby was a rapist, and then it blew up.
No shit.
Yeah, it all came from comedy. And Hannibal hates this. In fact, he's told me, he's like, do you think I that I'm going to have to answer these questions forever? I would love it. First of all, I'm so sorry if becoming a superhero is overshadowing that my roommate threw out my pickle juice because there were no pickles in it, but I indeed enjoy pickle juice.
Right, right.
I don't mind taking down a serial rapist.
Right.
You know, do both. Your comedy's going just fine. Your movies are going just fine. And you happen to be a superhero.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I get it. I mean, we also can turn on mics, you know, every day of the week and continue to give our opinion and have other opinions. He gets like 5-minute interviews sometimes that, I don't know, I'd rather not let that be my platform. I think a lot of times celebrities get put into boxes and that's the only thing they're asked about. So if it's not about, you know, being trans or being a lesbian or being, you know, the only black person this way or that way, like it's always something. So you don't want rape to be or something.
Yeah.
And then you got to find ways of like being funny while people are asking you because he's got a couple of chances to continue to show charm and charisma because that's what interviews are about. It sucks.
Do a 50-minute show. Make him laugh. Ooh, yeah. Final 10 minutes.
Bring that shit up.
You say, hey, let's look into the following people.
Or just start
a new Schindler's List.
Right. I've been hearing things about the following.
Oh, man. I can't tell you this much. Just one more thing on Black-ish. I will fully be the first to admit, and all the guys, if they were all sitting around right now, there's many, many, many similarities between me and Josh, and one of them is my complete lack of knowledge of being a black person in America. I mean, I don't know much about the pop culture, what it's like. Every episode, practically, we're sitting around. Dion and Anthony will mention something. If Wanda's there, maybe something comes to mind. I'll be like, what's that? What do you guys mean?
God.
I've always
just
been this way anyway.
Just taking a note, Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Crow. All
right. Is that a buddy of yours? I'll look him up.
Seriously, though. Like, seriously. I mean, you cannot tell you how many times they'll just look up at me and joke and they'll be like, do you know who that is? And I'll be like, oh, God, no. I have no idea. But
does that feel kind of shitty?
No, because that's why. But that's because who I am as a person. Will be the first. I'm always that person at the party if we're all standing around and someone's like, hey man, yeah, so this person was there. And you know, people just shake their head. You're like, nah, that person. Right. I'm like, I have no idea who that person is. And I don't want to be faking it. And so in that setting, I just fully allow the hits to come and they do. They take shots at me all the time. But I love it because I don't know. And we play these games many times where they'll be like, who's this? And I'll be like, oh yeah, well, who's Alanis Morissette? And they'll be like, yeah.
And they'll be like, I know because you people shove your shit in my faces.
Which is, no, Hemda, that is such a good point. That's the thing.
You're not going to not know your references.
It's a huge discussion.
Because, yeah, I see what you're saying, Jeff, but I said Martin Luther King.
It's not that bad, but it is up there, man.
Yeah, well, who's Oingo Boingo? Okay, we're talking about...
But I do, like, here's one that I had no, in the final.
If you say Biggie, I'll kill you.
Yeah, I have no idea who he is. Biggie who? In the final episode of season one, these are the things that stick in my head, and these are the things that I am blown away by, and this is what makes this show so amazing. Like, did you know that in the 20s and 30s, that there was something called the paper bag test? Do you know what that is?
Yes.
That's insane.
It's the shade. You put the paper bag next to a black person, and if they're that shade or lighter, they pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about that.
That you can, like,
Hemda,
trust
would
them
be
more.
Tough on that. You know, like, you would be close to the shade. Like, you are, but like that, think about that. Yeah. You know, like, I had no idea. That's that thing that was just literally the depth of their skin color made a difference. So a lighter skinned black person compared to a darker skin.
And they tried to be subtle about it. Like, you would, when you would walk into the office for a job, a paper bag would be hanging on the wall.
It's the wallpaper itself is the shade.
Oh, don't worry. White people know how to memorize things like that.
Yeah.
They're not colorblind when that comes up.
Man, I have said multiple times on the show, we have read a line while we're sitting there, and I've finished the line that I'm saying. I go, really? Like, that's, I had no idea.
Well,
happens all the time. Mind blowing. The shit that this country has done to black people through the years is mind blowing.
Slavery. Son of a!
Wait, did you know?
How long?
Yeah, did you know? Yeah.
This explains season one through four.
I mean, this is so recent. My mother-in-law remembers separate fountains.
Really?
Yeah. It's not that long ago. And for the longest time, people were like, what? That was 400 years ago. No, it was 400 years of slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting what we're like. We went to school, quote, learning about this, but
This is when my dad was in college during these times. You mm-hmm. know, like, you know,
it's not that far removed.
No, it is not.
When you got the job for Black-ish, were you like, obviously great news? But then, did you think Black-ish? That'll ever make it on, you fucking idiots.
The reverse. So when I first got it, it was the Untitled Anthony Anderson Project. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's that funny guy mm-hmm. from Me, Myself, and Irene. Like, that's what I just always thought. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, he's super funny. The moment the title got attached to it, that's when I was like, oh, that's a cool name. Like, people are going to watch that. And then we would just get, and I say we because we had no idea what The Office was going to be. We would just get emails. And they would be like, hey, show up for the table read for 102. And we'd be like, okay. And then we'd show up to the table read. And they'd be like, I remember Larry Wilmore, who was one of our showrunners for a small period of time before he went to go do a show on Comedy Central, came over.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. He was one of our, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And he would come over. I still remember this moment. You know, there's so many crazy things in season one. And he said, hey, Jeff, did you mind, we're going to do this prank to you in 106 for the Halloween episode. And I just want to make sure you're cool with doing like pratfalls and like some stunt stuff. And I was like, yeah, no, man, that's totally cool. And he walked away and I looked at Peter. I was like, dude, we're in 106. Like, I didn't, that's how much we didn't know what we were going to be. And then it just kept getting better and better and better. And
that's, do you want to prank me in 7, 8, 9?
Yeah, totally. I'll do whatever you want. Sure. Yes. But instead I got to play cool. So
do you still audition for anything or go out for anything?
Yeah, for sure. I'm doing a Netflix movie right now. Called Riptide. You know, I have my, I will always have that side where I can, Nickelodeon and Disney, you know, channel kind of shows like to hire me. I was also on a Nickelodeon show for years called The Thundermans.
You were the principal.
I was the principal. I was Principal Bradford, who got make, by the way, two shows, Black-ish and Thundermans. Both characters started as recurring characters that had no information on their backstory. Both became single, lonely white men. Find that interesting.
Interesting.
Find that interesting.
Make a background while you're young.
I mean, literally, that's what they were. So, you know, I always have that world of the love for the kids, multicam, zany, you know, characters. But this Riptide's really fun. I just worked on a pilot called Man of the House. So I you know, I'm helping with things. I'm Dion and I supposedly are shooting a commercial for Nissan Rogue where we're going to have an argument over who's Han and who's Han for the new Han Solo movie. So who's Lando Calrissian, who's Han Solo.
Wow, cool.
Like, cool. There's just so many cool things that have come out of this. I mean, I went from a guy making commercials to going to the Emmys and going up and having, you know,
being and your wife even gets to be on the show with you.
Yes. So then my wife got cast completely independently.
Really?
She knew the casting directors. I had told for years, you got to bring my wife in. And next thing you know, she gets cast as Holiday Hannah in the hospital scenes where Tracy's, whenever she goes to work, she has a little group that's hilarious too at work. And my wife is the lonely single white woman.
Right. So. And then they both got arrested because nobody's watching the kids.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
See, honey, I tried to tell you.
My mom once said to me, the only thing about the show I don't believe is that she is this woman who's a doctor who has five children and she can still be a doctor. Left progressive woman and said that to me. She's like, I just don't believe that that's possible. And I was like, it's based on a real woman. The creator of the show, Kenya Bears's wife, was an anesthesiologist, but like had it in, she is a doctor that raised six children.
Well, let me tell you something. I've had a couple doctors in my day.
Yeah.
They can have 10 children and 3 side jobs.
Pay more
attention.
Yeah, they're really. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. All right. I get it.
Just when you think you're proud of someone, Keith will take care of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hope she'll shoot it down.
No, I'm sure this person's great. At Jeff Meacham, you can follow online. MEACHAM.
Yeah, that's it. Twitter? That's correct, man. No, don't do Twitter. I don't do Twitter. Go follow me on Instagram where I do stupid stories. My love of Tom Cruise is there. My kids, you can see them half naked running around my yard.
Yeah, up their game, right?
Oh, my kids
covered
game?
That. Yeah.
No, you
yeah,
son of a bitch. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe start them on the scooter and then push the kid, then turn it off, and then the kid can fall in the grass.
I get what you say.
All right, that's normal. I'm like, what am I looking at?
Parenting advice.
Yeah, from yeah. Yeah.
Let me tell you how awkward.
Take that with you.
I've seen this video of this kid failing on that scooter.
What do you mean? Didn't fail?
So, well, if you don't try, you don't fail. It's so uncomfortable. It'd be like if you made a short movie yourself and showed it to me and it was horrible. It's like, oh, I know somebody.
Everybody that's listening to this, for the next week straight, I'm going to put my kid on that scooter and he's going to fucking scoot.
Okay, now we're talking.
You guys follow us on social media. And if you like this or any other episode, please share it, like, comment, you know, subscribe, all of that fun stuff. KeithandTheGirl.com